This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everybody, Hockey News Podcast is back. Matt Larkin here with the fellas, Ken Campbell and Ryan Kennedy. And we've got some big news right off the hopper here.
Huge.
Ken just dropped an absolute bombshell this morning in the office. I'm just going to let you explain what's going on here, Ken.
Well, you know, here, just a sec first. Just opening the Diet Coke there. Anyways, some people, you know, they really have a sense of humor, right? Some people don't have a great sense of humor, and a lot of those people don't like me. A lot of other people don't like me, too, but a lot of people with no sense of humor don't like me, but some people have a really good sense of humor, and there's a guy out there by the name of Kevin O'Reilly from Tejeros, New Mexico. You know who you are, Kevin. Anyways, Kevin sent a letter today to us, sent it by FedEx with $50 U.S. in it.
So that's like $700.
Exactly. Yeah. And he, you know, because last week, if you listened to the podcast last week, we were joking around about, you know, revenue opportunities and how, you know, maybe if you send us $50, specifically me $50 in the mail, we would shout out your bar mitzvah or funeral or wedding or whatever. And so anyways, Kevin sent $50 in the mail. He didn't really ask for anything. He just went into a long sort of diatribe about how Coke Zero is better than Diet Coke, which is completely wrong because Coke Zero tastes like Coke and Coke tastes too syrupy, which is why I don't drink it in the first place. Anyways.
Diet Coke.
Anyways, at the end he said, thanks for your podcast request. It's not every day I'm presented with the creative opportunity to tip one of my favorite writers. I am in no way associated with the Coca-Cola company. I'm happily retired from a life of selling pharmaceuticals, for the record, licit. I like that too. As opposed to illicit pharmaceuticals. So anyways, Kevin O'Reilly. Anyways, Kevin O'Reilly from Tejeros, New Mexico. Thank you. If you're listening, please get back to me and let me know if you want me to A, send your $50 back to you, or B, donate it to charity, which I will happily do, a charity of your choice. And if you don't choose one, it'll be a charity of our choice. Lots of kudos to you, buddy.
All right, yeah. Speaking of charity, I don't know why I always feel the need to use a segue, but it's just what I do. How about the charity that 31 NHL owners are going to get thanks to Seattle looking like it's ready to go as expansion team number 32? Everyone's going to get a nice little chunk of that $650 million fee.
Yep.
So what do you guys think? I guess we'll start with just specifically Seattle. Do you feel like this is a done deal?
Yes.
Yes, and why?
Because it, just the whole way this is all being structured, I mean, they don't do this if they don't have it as a slam dunk, right? Like, can you imagine if the NHL said, okay, yeah, you can apply, you're the only one who's applying, we're only interested in you right now, and then they turn them down? I mean, how do you turn down Jerry Bruckheimer? You know, I mean, all the pieces are in place, and I mean, the fact of the matter is that, you know, the NHL has coveted the Pacific Northwest forever. They've wanted Seattle as every bit as badly as Seattle has wanted to be in the NHL. And I remember the last time, two, three years ago, when they opened up expansion the last time, and Seattle did not apply because they couldn't get their stuff together on a new arena. I remember quite vividly the disdain in Gary Bettman's voice about that. He was very upset that Toronto didn't put in a bid, and he was really upset that Seattle didn't put in a bid. And I mean, it checks off all the boxes. It evens out the conferences. It gives them a good TV market. It gives them, you know, someone in the Pacific Northwest where they don't have anybody. You know, good ownership. All they were waiting for was a rink. Mm-hmm. And now that it appears as though the Key Center is going to be renovated for $650 million. I don't get that. Why don't you just tear it down and build another one for that much?
I actually have the answer to that.
Oh, do you?
Apparently, okay. From the research I've done, the roof.
Oh,
the
you
Key
did
Center,
you did research.
According to my thesis.
Oh, you did research.
Yeah. Well, we do have a magazine to close that may have some relevant articles. Mm-hmm. Smartass. Apparently the roof of that arena is like historical and they can't get rid of the roof. So what they're doing with the renovation is essentially building under it to make it NHL grade and NBA grade, I would suppose. And that's why it costs so much, because...
So why were they able to take down the Sam the Record Band sign in downtown Toronto?
Well, that was controversial as well.
And they can't take off a roof and put it somewhere else.
Different jurisdiction.
Okay.
Yeah. Apples to oranges. And obviously, if Seattle's coming in, there's going to be some realignment, because we're going to get 9 Pacific teams, at least on paper right now. So I've talked about this little plan before that I see happening, but you know, you're going to have one team move to the Central Division, which only has 7 teams. I guess geographically Houston or Arizona would be the best bet, but I'm curious if Arizona might relocate to Houston. We know that the arena lease is up this year for the Coyotes. There's maybe an opportunity if Houston could get things organized quickly enough. Could we see a quick relocation? Then you get 8 teams in each division in a year or two. I wonder if that's going to happen.
Well, I think ultimately that there's a very, very good chance that will happen. You know, I mean, I from what I'm being told, that, you know, these two spots, Houston and Seattle, one of them's being held for a relocation, one of them's being held for expansion. And from what I'm told, that there seems to be some sort of discussion over which is going to be which. I don't know why. I don't know why it makes a difference, but it was very, very interesting. And I think it was one of the more underreported things that Gary Bettman said in his news conference after the Board of Governors that day. He said, yeah, okay, well, we're inviting them to apply for expansion for 2021 and 2020-21, whatever that is. And he said, but he said, if we deem it, you know, necessary, we could move an expansion. We could move an existing franchise there. Now, nobody's thinking about that, blah, blah, blah. Gary Bettman doesn't say that stuff unless there's something to it. He just doesn't. I mean, if I've learned one thing about this guy in the 20 or 25 years that he's been the commissioner of the NHL, it's that he doesn't, you know, everything is said, every word has a purpose. Mm-hmm. So there was a purpose to that. Was it to give Calgary a kick in the pants and maybe say, "Hey Calgary, you know, If you don't get your arena act together, we could move you to Houston"? Or is it a veiled situation with Arizona? And I think it definitely could be one of those.
And you think about it, if Seattle is slated for 2021, that gives you a bit of lead time where, you know, obviously Arizona needs a new building, and you're looking at Houston, where I don't think it'll be too long, you know, before they could have their building sorted out if they wanted, you know, if they were going to go all in.
Oh, they played hockey there before. They could.
Yeah, exactly. So that could be, so they could be there right away. So now you're giving yourself flexibility where if Seattle's not ready until 2021 and you need a landing place for a franchise, i.e. the Coyotes, then Houston, maybe they're the relocation team because they could, you know, get the team in earlier.
Yeah, I think you're bang on about that.
And note that we have not even mentioned the mere possibility of Quebec City. And I think it's something we should address, because I know on Twitter, I'm sure you guys have been getting it too, but there's been questions galore. Yeah. What about Quebec? What about Quebec? What about Quebec? And to me, the NHL is tripping over itself to get away from Quebec. Every chance it gets to poo-poo the idea of Quebec, it does. To me, it couldn't be further away from a possibility right now. Right. And I know a lot of fans don't want to hear that, but I really think it's the case. Especially, you know, there's that idea of Carolina being the team to relocate to Quebec. Carolina ain't going anywhere. And Gary Bettman,
not
again,
for 7 years.
Yeah,
anyways.
And Bettman was very clear about that last week, too. Do you think that the Quebec City idea, it really is a pipe dream right now?
Well, first of all, I think we have to have a full disclosure here that we all work for the Hockey News, which is owned by TVA Sports, which is owned by Quebecor, which is the driving force behind the people wanting to get a team for Quebec City. So I think we have to put that out there. Secondly, I don't know how this is going to play with the higher-ups in Quebec.
We might get fired, all of us.
But I think Quebec has become Hamilton. I really do. I think Quebec's become Hamilton. You know, for you guys, it was a long time ago. For older guys like me, it doesn't seem like that long ago that Hamilton was the shiny new bauble, the new place where the NHL was going to go. And they had this rink that was state-of-the-art and beautiful and up-to-date and everything. And then 1 year passed, and then another year passed, and then more years passed, and now Cops Coliseum's and it's antiquated. And nobody's talking about Hamilton ever, the NHL ever expanding to Hamilton, like, at all. It's not even on the radar. And I fear that Quebec City is maybe destined to be, you know, Quebec's version of Hamilton.
Yeah, the stalking horse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. We it's always going to be held out there as, oh, you know, if we don't get what we want, you know, there's always Quebec City, and then they get what they want. So.
Right, yeah. I mean, even you look at a franchise like Ottawa that's trying to get a new arena
exactly.
in their future.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, well, we could go to Quebec City. It's not even that far.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you look too, Kansas City was the same situation maybe about five,
yeah,
6 years ago.
Yeah, Pittsburgh, for Nashville, for other teams, yeah.
Sprint Center was brand mm-hmm. new. And, I mean, it even had good backing. That's the interesting thing to me about Seattle's bid is they seem to have all the right people involved, like Tim Lewicki, who had great success with the Los Angeles Kings, had great success with Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment when he worked there.
Yeah.
He's involved in the Oakview Group, which was behind the arena
which
plan.
Which makes it even more of a slam dunk.
Not only, well, what makes it a real slam dunk in Seattle is that Jeremy Jacobs, his Delaware North company, is going to be in charge of concessions. Mm. And Jeremy Jacobs is one of the most powerful owners in all the NHL.
If not the most
Boston
powerful,
Bruins.
Yeah. He's number one.
The most. So you have the right people in place there. Having said that, with Kansas City, I mean, they had the backing of AEG, owned by Philip Anschutz, who owns the Kings, and it didn't happen, although it did look really close a couple of times. But I guess my roundabout point is that you can have a beautiful building, and Quebec City does have a beautiful building, but there's so many other factors involved when it comes to TV market and where the NHL wants a team. And corporate support, and it really all has to line up, it feels like.
And you hear every time, it seems like the Montreal Canadiens always say the right thing about Quebec City, you know, that we'd love to have our rival back and everything like that, but the fact of the matter is you're parsing up a monopoly.
Yeah.
And it's and the Montreal Canadiens are very, very powerful. Just like the Toronto Maple Leafs are. Like, it's insane. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's in fact borders on insane that Toronto doesn't have a second NHL team. Name me one league in the world where the marquee city, the center of the universe, if you will, only has one team. I can't think of one. Like, I mean, New York has several teams in every sport, you know, and in soccer, in the English Premier League, London has a bunch of teams. And, you know, so, I mean, that's part of it as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think the best case scenario for Quebec is to become Winnipeg and sort of the fallback. I mean, Winnipeg had an MTS center and the NHL wasn't crazy about going there. It was a small arena capacity and same relatively small TV market, but it worked out as a landing spot for a team that was dying.
Yeah.
So I think Quebec's best case scenario is that. But what I'm curious what you guys think is, which team is the team that would die? Because a lot of people think it's Carolina, but it's not going to be Carolina.
Well, not
is
for
it
7 years.
Be,
not for seven years.
Yeah.
I mean, 7 years, is that a long time or isn't it? I don't know. I mean, by the time 7 years comes, the Videotron Center will be 10, 11 years old, right?
Yeah, a lot can change.
So who knows? But I mean, you know, everybody looks at the same two teams in the East, right?
It's for alignment purposes, I don't think you can use Arizona in this case because you can't have another team in the East. So. But I still wonder if Ottawa is that sleeper team. I mean,
no. Well, it's a sleeper team, but I think everybody looks at Florida and says, you know, how long can they sustain this? Right. Mm.
That's. Fair.
I mean, every do you guys watch games in Florida? It's incredible. It looks like nobody's there.
It's easier to find empty seats than people.
Yeah, the bottom bowl is virtually empty. I mean, there are people, I guess, in the upper bowls, but where the camera angles are, it looks the optics are terrible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Switching off expansion now, maybe sticking with Ottawa for a little bit. Eric Karlsson, he made a stir a couple weeks ago talking about how he knows he's going to get paid. And, of course, we know that it's okay that he knows that. But, obviously, it seems to have put the fear of God in some Ottawa Senators fans. And there's a lot of rumor-mongering happening right now about should the Senators trade Eric Karlsson. And, yes, he's going to be a UFA in 2019. But do you think there's anything to this idea, or to you guys, is this a piece that you never surrender and should be still building around, even if your team is flopping this year?
Well,
like Corey Hart,
yeah.
Never surrender.
I thought you were going to say, like Corey Hart, something about sunglasses at night. I was like, no, it doesn't fit.
Those are the only two analogies you can use with
Corey
Hart.
Pretty much. No, I think that you do whatever you need to do to re-sign Eric Karlsson in Ottawa because players like that don't come around very often. They're generational players, especially with the speed of the game right now. the way that Erik Karlsson can activate a rush, the way that he can just be a one-man rush for that matter and create offense off the back end, play the minutes he does. If you trade Erik Karlsson, like, what do you get in return?
Yeah, you know what, though, Ryan? I don't know if that's the point because, I mean, if it becomes clear that you're not going to be able to re-sign him because he looks at the team and looks at the situation and sees that he's not going to win and decides that he wants to go somewhere where he is going to win, then you're in a situation where, you might lose him as an unrestricted free agent for nothing. And so I see where that's coming from. I think a lot of this was generated by, you know, the stuff that Elliot Friedman of Hockey Night Canada broke this weekend with respect to, Karlsson and a number of other players, Dion Phaneuf, Mike Hoffman, were all asked, I guess, to submit their teams that they would choose to be traded to if they... So, I mean, it was more of a blanket thing, but that's a really a tough one. Like, do you... You know, if it becomes clear that he's not going to re-sign and he's going to go somewhere else, then what do? I don't think you cut bait now. I mean, these are the kinds of deals that get made at the draft or you know, sometime in the summer. I mean, he just married a girl from Ottawa. The Ottawa Senators have to be thrilled about that.
And she's pregnant, Melinda Curry.
Yeah. He married a girl from Ottawa. He's very entrenched there. But this is the same organization that let Daniel Alfredsson walk. I mean, they let him walk.
But I don't think the context, that was a different context, Alfie.
Of course it was.
At the very end of his career,
wanting to pursue a cup. Of course it was a different context. But it's still... You know, I mean, the one thing I don't think, and I think a lot of this with the can of worms was opened up by what Karlsson said 10 days ago or whatever when they were in, I think they were playing the Islanders. So I think a lot of this is sort of a byproduct of that. What I don't see the Senators doing is trading this guy out of spite. Like, I don't see them being that short-sighted. Mm-hmm. If they trade him... They'll trade him because they think they have no other choice. They don't think they're going to be able to re-sign him, and they want to get the building blocks for the future. And if you do that, if you come to that conclusion, I would think that the natural sort of thing would be to do it in the summer because he's still got a year left on his deal. The team that gets him has a year to negotiate a contract with him, all those sorts of things.
Yeah, and I mean, from Erik Karlsson's perspective... If he wants to win in Ottawa, I don't think it's that much of a pipe dream in the next few years. Like, he's going to have to wait, because obviously right now they're in the tank, kind of unexpectedly. I don't think anybody thought they would be this bad. But you look at what's coming up, and they don't have a necessarily deep prospect pool, but it's very top-heavy.
It is, yeah.
Thomas Chabot, Logan Brown, Colin White are all very good players. Brown and White... Those could be your one and two centers in like 3 years.
And
if
I think
everything
all
works
three
out.
Of those guys are going to be in the NHL next year.
Yeah.
Very good chance, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Shabbat's already playing well. White probably would have been there if he hadn't gotten hurt in the preseason. And Logan Brown, like, he's going to continue getting stronger. He's going to be at the World Juniors this year. And I would expect him to be one of the big drivers for Team USA. So, I mean, if Erik Karlsson can look at those three players... And say, okay, well, we've got something there. And obviously they have a bunch of veterans already of varying degrees of excellence. You know, you got Mark Stone, you got Mike Hoffman. I mean, that's a pretty good base to build around. And again, in the Eastern Conference, like, anything can kind of happen. So I don't think that Ottawa's in the sort of place where Karlsson will look and say, like, there's nothing here, I might as well
I think we're in the white noise stage right now of all of this. And you know what, that's not to say that it won't progress into something more substantial or that, you know, that this is all just a much ado about nothing. But I think right now we're kind of in the white noise stage of things.
For sure. And I think from Ottawa's perspective, too, I mean... If you're good at trade Karlsson, the whole messaging of your roster composition is very mixed. If you're shopping Erik Karlsson, then you got to start shopping Matt Duchene, whose contract expires next year as well. I think you'd trade him before you trade Erik Karlsson, because if you're trading Karlsson, you're really tearing it down.
Oh, yeah.
And you might be looking at, hey, man, look, it costs an arm and a leg to get Duchene, so what could we get for Karlsson?
Yeah, it really wouldn't make sense from the strategic standpoint standpoint to do this because, you know, they've got Bobby Ryan on a long-term deal. They've got, you know, D'Onofrio on a long-term deal. They went out and got Matt Duchene. You know, so, I mean, really, you know, you're not really tearing anything down at the moment, right?
Yeah, and I think that's the giant domino. If you trade Carlson, you're just announcing the whole thing's blowing up. I don't think it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Shifting over to the Western Conference, devastating injury for the Blues, Jaden Schwartz. Yeah. The timeline, I think it's minimum 6 weeks right now, and it seems like Schwartz, he's a small bulldog of a player. He seems to get one of these injuries almost every year. What do you think it means for the Blues forecast, and does it damper your expectations for the team for the rest of the season? I know he's going to come back, but with the type of injury, I believe it's his ankle, right? And that's the type of injury that can really linger because it's hard to get your skate on your foot, literally.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually not too pessimistic. I mean, it was from a Mike Green shot, so it shouldn't be too complicated. The thing with St. Louis is they're so deep right now, and they are in first place, that they can weather this storm. Mm-hmm. They have players. And, you know, Shen and Steen, I believe they had Dmitry Yaskin Schwartz's place in the Buffalo game. They still got Vladimir Tarasenko. They got a great defense core. They have a very nice starting goalie in Jake Allen. I mean, they're going to drop probably a couple more games than they would have with Jaden Schwartz in the lineup, but I think they're still going to be at the top of the West. And, I mean, if you want to look silver lining here, once Schwartz comes back, all of a sudden you're going to get a player that's going to be a little more fresh for the playoffs than he would have been ordinarily. And I still think the Blues are one of the teams to beat in what's a pretty wide open Western Conference. I think that they've got a big conglomeration of talent, and it's unfortunate that Schwartz is out. But now, as I blogged this week, you get a better look at Jaskin. You get a better look at Sammy Blaze. You get a better look at Ivan Barbashev and see if any of those guys can seize a role. And then if you do have more injury problems down the line, you're confident in those guys.
I don't know if I actually agree on one of your points, and that's the depth. I think the Blues' biggest thing this year is they're extremely top-heavy. That dominant line has carried them. And I think it's more, I see the glasses half empty here. I think they're going to be exposed as a team that's been relying too much on one big trio. And the guys you mentioned, like Gaskin, they're good players, Barbashev, but they're good players when you're not forcing them into top-line roles when they may or may not be ready. Mm-hmm. And obviously, Robbie Fabry's out as well. So I'm worried. I mean, the Blues, I think they're going to be a playoff team, but I'm worried this injury could cost them maybe the central title and push them back down to the pack, maybe end up with a tougher first-round matchup as a result.
Think Nashville catches them?
Or Winnipeg. To me, the Blues, I've been sort of, not bearish, but I've just been waiting to see more secondary scoring, and you haven't gotten a ton of it. It's just that big line has been so dominant.
But I mean, that big line was at one time Schwartz, Shen, and Tarasenko, and then it became Schwartz, Shen, and Steen. Try and say that five times fast. Yeah. So, I mean, they have shown an ability to be able to adapt because Tarasenko's production kind of fell off. And I think that's the key to all of this is can Alex Steen, who kind of has been off to not a great start, pick things up? You know, can Vladimir Sobotka handle that kind of role and chip in consistently and offensively? And I think Tarasenko scored the overtime winner yesterday. It was his first non-empty net goal, I think, in 9 games.
Jeez.
So for me, I mean, I think a lot of it depends on whether or not Tarasenko can start to play the way we all know that he's capable of playing. I know he's been dropped down basically to the second line now. So that evens out the scoring a little bit. But you know what, Matt? I mean, yeah, okay, they're top-heavy, but like everybody is. Like, everybody has a fatal flaw now. Every team, like, name me a team. Name me one team that doesn't have depth issues.
Tampa Bay, Toronto, Winnipeg. Next.
Oh, you don't think Winnipeg has depth issues?
They got good forward depth, man. They do. I think the best teams in the league have multiple lines that can hurt you. Like, Tampa Bay can split Braden Point, Steven Stamkos, and Tyler Johnson onto 3 lines. That's depth, baby.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, but I think that every team has certain... Let's put it this way. They're all vulnerable to an injury of an impact player.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. But my point is just a team that is overly reliant on just a couple of players, I think, is more susceptible to a big regression when the player gets hurt. I said the same thing about Pittsburgh when Malkin got hurt because they have no real third-line center this year, no more Nick Bonino. So when Malkin was down, I was saying, oh, I'm really worried about the Penguins because they're their depth is not what it was last year.
Right, right. I think there's one thing about that is that Alex Pietrangelo missed the game yesterday too. And they're not sure. They don't think it's going to be a big deal, but they're not sure right now. And I think to me that would be a way bigger issue than Jaden Schwartz at this point of the conversation.
That's fair. Time for a few reader questions. We're going to start with Jimmy Curley, and Jimmy Curley says, sounds like an old gangster name, by the way. Jimmy Curley, see? Can the Arizona Coyotes please trade Oliver Ekman-Larsson? No, Jimmy, no. While his stock is high for a decent player and a pick, his stock is always high, Jimmy. Come on, Jimmy.
No.
And why would you want a decent player when you have a very good player?
Yeah.
Poor Jimmy.
Jimmy Curley just got whacked.
See, to me, trading Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and I've said this before, would send all the wrong messages to that room, to that dwindling fan base, to that everything. At some point, you got to stop being a farm team for the rest of the league, don't you? At some point, you got to stop being the Montreal Expos.
Yeah, there you go.
You got to stop being the Montreal Expos, and you got to hang on to these players. And you know what? His contract's up after next year. Yeah, he's going to want a ton of money. But yeah, you play in the NHL. You need NHL players.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're gonna have to reach the cap floor
somehow.
You gotta
pay someone.
You gotta pay somebody to play the games.
Yeah.
You know, it might as well be a guy that's that good.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening. Nor do I think it would be a good idea if it happened.
No, it feels like he's going to be captain sooner or later.
Yeah.
Yeah, and most of their really good players are still on entry-level deals, and those players still need to perform better than they have been, but there's a lot of potential there. And again, I thought they would be better this year, but goaltending really sunk them early, and then it was just like completely down the drain. But again, next year, Arizona could be like pretty decent.
Mm-hmm. And you don't want that state of affairs where the Coyotes basically become almost like a player college where players graduate, like Martin Hansel, Michael Bodker, right. Danny Briere back in the day, where guys... It's almost a known thing.
What did Hansel graduate to?
Well, you know,
what the heck did he graduate to?
A better third line.
Yeah, better
graduated
third line.
To homelessness. What? Like, I mean, come on.
But just the point. I know he hasn't been good this year, but the point being that it's almost known
that Hansel's not
a guy. Right now, yes,
man.
That as well. But my point is, just guys who are first round picks, and you know they're brought along the system, and it's just almost assumed. Okay,
you got to keep someone other than Shane Doan.
Now you've reached your prime. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and they would have traded him if they could have.
Yeah, that's right. In summary, sorry, Jimmy, you will not be GM of the Coyotes anytime soon.
But we like you. Keep
yeah, we like you.
Jimmy.
Sorry, Jimmy. We love
Jimmy,
you.
We like
so,
you.
Sorry.
Sorry. Hey, can we read that question from the guy that sent the question today? How does Ken Campbell still have a job?
No, that was last week. This one was why does Ken Campbell still work at the Hockey News?
I got nothing. I don't know. They keep telling me to show up, and every time I see a player at the rink, it's like I saw Matt Stajan last week, who I used to cover when I worked at the Toronto Star. I covered him when he played for the Leafs. He says, "So how you doing?" I said, "Oh, they're still paying me to show up here." So I don't know.
And if you fire a Ken Campbell, then you have to find another Ken Campbell.
That's true.
Right? Yeah.
Just like Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Sends the wrong message.
Dan McCrary's got the next question. Since the NHL is out of the Olympics, do you think Team Canada is still the heavy favorite? I don't think so.
No.
To me, this is Russia's tournament to lose. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. I think Sweden will be pretty good too.
Yeah.
But I mean, the fact of the matter is, we're all going into this like, you know, feeling our way around, right? We don't know really how good everybody's going to be. But I think Russia has to screw this up royally in order not to win. I mean, they've been banned. However, you know, Putin made it clear last week that they will let any athlete who's clean, and their hockey players have generally been that, generally speaking. So they've got firepower. They've got guys who have played together for a long time. There should be no reason. Russia is the front runner going in. Canada, I don't know, they'll be decent. They'll have some, you know, they'll have some decent decent guys with some good NHL experience, like, you know, Mason Raymond and Andrew Ebbett, and in goal they'll have Ben Scrivens, and on the blue line they'll have Chris Lee, and they'll have a few other guys that have played in the NHL. So I assume they're going to be in the mix, but to call them the favorite, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, I would look even, I mean, Rush is the obvious choice, but I feel like in these pressure situations, for whatever reason, they end up stumbling. I would look at a country like Finland, where it's small enough that these guys will have familiarity with each other, and then you do have some really intriguing young kids in Miro Heiskanen and Ili Tolvanen, who will probably get a chance to play on that Olympic team. They'll be at the World Juniors for sure, and I think they'll be at the Olympics as well. So you'll have some high-end talent that's NHL-worthy on its way up, rather than pretty much all the other people in the tournament where they used to be NHL-worthy, or they never were in the first place. So that would be a team that I'd look at and say, like, well, you know.
You know what? And you know what? I'm getting on board more with that with every passing second, because I think a lot of this tournament is going to be decided by is, one, familiarity, and two, you know, just sheer gumption and heart. And like, when you get into an international situation, what country has more of that than Finland? Nobody.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, these guys play hard, hard, hard. They're never an easy out.
Yeah.
You know, or they're rarely an easy out, no matter how good or bad they are. Yeah, I could see that happening for sure.
If I'm Team Russia, I just, for the chemistry factor, just load up on St. Petersburg and Red Army guys. Already existing chemistry. And you're going to have Kovalchuk. And to me, I can only assume Russia's goaltending is going to be unbelievable. Whether it's going to be, I assume Ilya Samsonov would be the starter.
Well,
or would it be
Shesterkin
or Sorokin?
Those are
your three.
Stats,
right? Yeah, all three of them are just amazing prospects. So I think they're going to be the best team in the tournament for goaltending. And they're going to have arguably the best marquee player in Kovalchuk. But then again, we've said many times in the history of hockey, Russia can't screw this up, surely. So you never know.
And don't call me Shirley.
Surely they did.
That's right.
But there's going to be pressure on them because.
Oh, yeah.
Well, is there going to be pressure on them? So they're actually technically not even playing for Russia, right? Like, they're going to be playing for the organized. What is it again? What
the
is
OAR.
It? Yeah, Organized Athletes of Russia or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're. Yeah, I mean, they're gonna have pressure on them because of the front runner status, but they're not gonna be at home. I think it's gonna be a tournament that it's not gonna be on everybody's radar. So maybe they don't feel as much pressure as maybe they felt in the past. I don't know.
Maybe they play down to the level of the tournament. Who knows? Anything can happen.
Yeah. Anything can happen.
Okay, everybody, that's it for this week's podcast. And later this week, we're going to have a full World Junior Championship preview, so stay tuned for that. Thanks.